Do you owe $10,000 or more to the IRS?
Then get on board with the Tax Admiral and let us steer your way to financial freedom.
The IRS is the largest collection agency in the world. They can freeze your bank accounts, seize your car, home, will garnish your paychecks and benefits.
Don't take on the IRS alone. I can fight for you using industry secrets that can help stop the IRS. I'll cut your penalties, slash your interest, and reduce your overall tax bill. Sometimes I can even get it zeroed out completely.
We're an A-rated company with over 30 years experience helping people clean up their mess with the IRS. And we have a 95% customer satisfaction rating.
If you owe $10,000 or more to the IRS, are facing an audit, a lien, or levy, then call me right away.
Call 800-647-1088. Again, that's 800-647-1088. 800-647-1088. 800-647-1088.
You want answers?
I think I'm entitled.
You want answers?
I want the truth! You can't handle the truth!
Dave Hodges is as mad as hell, and he's not gonna take it anymore.
I'd like to help you, Dave, but it's a really, really weird, but the din in my head, it's too much and it's no good. I'm standing in a window tunnel, shouting through the wall, and I'd like to give you information, asking for a good blood mate.
Common sense is not so common. This is the Common Sense Show with Dave Hodges.
Welcome to another exciting edition of the Common Sense Show. Dave Hodges and James White here. We are the co-hosts of the Common Sense Show, brought to you by TalkNetwork.com, and we are sponsored by FoodForLiberty.com. /Hodges, where we have a great grab-and-go special. Yes, if you ever have to bug out, this is your deal. 76 tasty meals, reasonably priced, 6 months, same as cash. Again, that's foodforliberty.com/Hodges. Well, in today's show, we're pleased and privileged to be interviewing old friend of ours, Paul Preston of Agenda 21 Radio, and we're going to kind of be all over the map with topics. And before we get into this, let Paul tell you about himself, his great background. And by the way, he and I share the commonality of being former basketball coaches. And so, Paul, let me just throw it over to you and tell the listening audience a little bit about your background.
Well, Dave and Jim, really thank you for having me on the show. And it's really a privilege to be with you guys because, you know, we're fighting the fight and you guys are right out there as the tip of the spear. And so it's exciting for me to be with you guys. Anytime you want me to be on, please ask. Okay, so I started in education, actually. I was a high school teacher, educator, and coach. I started coaching and teaching back in the early 70s, and I was teaching biological sciences, environmental sciences, and anatomy, physiology, and ultimately, over the course of my career, taught such courses as chemistry as well in the physical sciences. The only thing I didn't teach in science was physics. And when I became a science department chairman, I kept myself away from teaching physics. I managed to use the master schedule to my advantage. But a couple of things happened in my career as a teacher is that I became entwined with a group called Greenpeace. And I joined Greenpeace as a budding biological sciences teacher in the early 1990s, and then I joined some other groups called the Cetacean Society, and I don't know, there were five or six other ones. And it was interesting because I was all in on, you know, Greenpeace and everything, and I thought that was the way to go. Because back in the day, we were having environmental problems. We were having global cooling occur, and plus the rapid population explosion by Paul Ehrlichman telling everybody that we have a population bomb problem. Well, of course, after a while, when you start figuring out and thinking for yourself as a teacher, you figure out that some of the stuff you're being shoveled is a bunch of shovely stuff. And so I figured out that it was propaganda more than anything else. And I did have a fair amount of knowledge about communism and how totalitarians worked at that time. And I could see that there was a connection going on. So I became very disenchanted with Greenpeace and the movement, not the Cetacean Society. I stayed with them for quite a while. Now, those of you that don't know, cetaceans are warm-blooded sea mammals, such as whales and dolphins and so on. And I was very, very happy to be involved in the watching the regeneration, if you will, of an endangered species called the California gray whale. I spent many years supporting the Cetacean Society, and now there's just so many gray whales out there that they're becoming navigation hazards. So that was sort of a pinnacle moment for my biological sciences teacher. Then I became a school administrator, and then I started to really see the world from an education standpoint. And over the course of several years as a school administrator, I realized that there was something very desperately wrong with the American education system. And I could see that there were some influences, unwanted influences, especially from the UC system here in California. Things weren't going quite the way I thought they should go. Ultimately, what happened through the course of my administration cycle, anyway, I decided to start a radio show to express my displeasure with what I was seeing as end results. So I started a radio show back in 2000 called The Inside Education Show to bring to light to everyone the problem of the high school dropout. And I was focusing on California. I remember, I'll never forget this, I did my first show out of a large radio station in Sacramento, California. I did my first show, and by the time I got home, I had over 100 phone calls that had people had been trying to contact me from. It was really very interesting. It was a one-hour show. It was all I could do to get through the show because I didn't think I had enough content. But little did I know that I really struck a nerve. And from there, I just started continuing on with the Inside Education Show. It was very, very obvious to me that there was a very, I guess you would say, big picture emphasis on what's happening to education. And through that, I could see and get explanations as to why we were redistributing our wealth to China and destroying our education system from within. I saw all the manual arts go away. I saw high school athletics start to diminish to their ultimate demise in some school districts, actually. I was bearing witness to the destruction of an outstanding educational system that had been built up over, 40, 50 years in California. And, of course, now today we look at it and we realize that it's a wreck. But this is all something that has been planned and orchestrated. And I started to realize that when I was doing the Inside Education Show. And finally what happened was about 5 years ago, can't believe it's been 5 years ago, Rosa Corey came on my show. And some of you, obviously, maybe not everybody knows who Rosa Corey is. She is the queen of Agenda 21. Mm-hmm. And she came on my show, and Heather Goss and some other people on my Inside Education Show. And it was very, very clear, very plain to me by that point in time that the Agenda 21 was really a constitution for the New World Order. And I could really see how, through the education system, how they were implementing it worldwide. So I went in. Literally, it was on a Thursday night I was doing the show. By that time, I was doing Inside Education 5 nights a week. I went into my station owner, Tom Huth, at the time on KMYC, 1410 AM here in Marysville, Yuba City, California. It's a 5,000-watt station north of Sacramento. It's kind of perfect strategically because when I start preaching things about education, the Sacramento politicians can hear they hate it. And so when I went into Tom, I said, Tom, I said, I got to start another radio show. I'm starting a radio show this Saturday called Agenda 21 Radio. And there it started. It started almost, it'll be going on 5 years. 5 years? 6 years. No, yeah, it's got to be 5 years this March. And we haven't looked back since. And, like we always say when we start the radio show, Agenda 21 Radio, we're stopping totalitarianism one person at a time. And I've had offers to have my show syndicated. And it's kind of interesting. I've had two offers, and two offers, they wanted me to drop that line, and I said, no. I'll just go it alone. No problem. I'm not dropping that line, stopping to it. They thought it was going to be a little too negative, and I said, well, you have to take me as who I am.
Paul, let me jump into this real quick here. When you were working in education, did you receive blowback for your radio activities?
Yes. Oh, yeah. The superintendent was, it was kind of interesting because I was broadcasting out of Sacramento. My local superintendent at the time, who was all in he was a precursor. And in fact, I think our school district at the time was a precursor school district to the Common Core people. I really do, because it became a Common Core school district instantaneously overnight. But yeah, my superintendent was just all over me because I was critical of the system, not him, of course. I mean, I was going to do it in my hometown. Interestingly enough, at the time, the state superintendent, I can't remember his name, I had him on my show a couple times. I can't remember his name. I'll think of it in a second. And he was quite positive about the radio show. He understood what I was doing, I think, more than anybody else. And I think at the time he was resistant to what the federal government was trying to pull on everybody.
You know, Paul, I really like the comment that you made, and I hadn't had to put like this before. Agenda 21 is the constitution for the New World Order.
Right.
You know, what we're seeing is, you know, that they've been able to infiltrate, Paul, just about every single solitary institution, you know, in America, and I say, dare say, maybe the world. What do you think? In my view, the Common Core that you mentioned earlier, that is the most insidious of the tentacles of the New World Order, and of course, as you aptly stated, Agenda 21 being their vehicle. Do you see Common Core, because they're really striking the heart of America's youth? And our friend Debbie Bacigalupi, and her and I do a Agenda 21 report on TalkNetwork.com. She had a textbook, Agenda 21 textbook, Paul, and it said in the textbook, "The earth groans each time a baby is born." You've probably seen that textbook.
It really is a
hating humanity. It's right. Almost a death cult. Do you see it almost as being like they hate life. They hate life. They love the earth more than they love humans, it seems.
Right.
What do you think about that?
It's earth worship, Mother Gaia, as they call it. Mm-hmm. It's Gaia worship. And, you know, this is the strange thing when you take a look at the Pope. The Pope was the biggest indicator of all, is in his encyclical. It was all about the environment. And he was, you know, rising up Mother Gaia, earth worship, as opposed to God and Jesus Christ. And when you look at that, you just don't believe it, number one, that the Pope would be into something like that. But that's very true. That's exactly what he's into. He's into, you know, and most Christians will tell you that's Satan worshiping. And I'll tell you that. That's what it is. And so when you see the Pope, who's 110% aligned with President Barack Hussein Obama, that's called a clue that perhaps this Pope, the first Jesuit Pope we've ever had, is a little bit askew of the Lord.
Well, real quick, if I can interject here, we got about a minute and a half left. Right now, world headed towards suicide if no climate agreement is reached, according to the Pope, Paul. So,
and of course, he is scientifically flawed in his logic, and so are the people behind him. They use false data at every turn. To foist this whole agenda on everybody. There's not a shred of evidence, real factual evidence, that supports anything that they say or anything that they do. They have very, very powerful positions. And the bottom line is they have an agenda. And the agenda is the one world order. The agenda is power and control and dominion over mankind. That's really what they're looking for.
Hey, Paul, we're coming to the end of the first segment here. Why don't you give out your website and the place where people can listen to your fine radio broadcast?
Yeah, we're kind of all over the place, but if you go to our website, agenda21radio.com, and I guarantee it is up. It is up. I mean, there were times like a couple weeks ago, and I was saying, well, try it today and see if it's running and see what's up. But it is up, agenda21radio.com. If you went there 3 months ago and you come back and look at it, it's a completely different thing. agenda21radio.com, and also we have all the station links there. We're on Red State Talk Radio. KMYC 1410 AM here in Northern California, and we reach really the whole nation through our syndicate of stations. We have about 47 stations that at some point in time clue into us during the day, 5 days a week. Sometimes, it's 7 days a week. So,
well, that's all we have. That's all the time we have here for this first segment on the Common Sense Show. We'll pick up this discussion with Paul Preston from Agenda 21 Radio after these short messages.
talking about America's decline, the liars that rule, the impending police state, the collapse of the dollar and the economy, or the loss of electricity due to an EMP? Well, it's just talk. A wise man does more. He prepares. Whatever the trigger or disaster, you cannot depend on your local grocer, the big box store, or any government handouts to feed your family. So reclaim your independence and food freedom by purchasing Numana Food Storage from foodforliberty.com. Numana Food Storage meals are individually wrapped and placed in a reusable bucket. Numana meals are delicious. Potato cheese casserole, beans and rice, pancakes, pasta primavera, habanero chili, and more. No MSG, no preservatives, no high fructose corn syrup, no GMOs. Nutritious food to feed your family, friends, and assembly at a very reasonable price. Under $2 a meal. So you can have a better shot at surviving the tough times. With a shelf life of 25 years, it's food insurance and food assurance. You'll need to add the fire in the water. Make the wise choice. Order Numana Food Storage from foodforliberty.com today. Foodforliberty.com.
Do you owe $10,000 or more to the IRS?
Then get on board with the Tax Admiral and let us steer your way to financial freedom.
The IRS is the largest collection agency in the world. They can freeze your bank accounts, seize your car, home, will garnish your paychecks and benefits.
Don't take on the IRS alone. I can fight for you using industry secrets that can help stop the IRS. I'll cut your penalties, slash your interest, and reduce your overall tax bill. Sometimes I can even get it zeroed out completely.
We're an A-rated company with over 30 years experience helping people clean up their mess with the IRS. And we have a 95% customer satisfaction rating.
If you owe $10,000 or more to the IRS, are facing an audit, a lien, or levy, then call me right away.
Call 800-647-1088. Again, that's 800-647-1088. 800-647-1088. 800-647-1088.
Welcome back, and thanks for staying with us to the break. This is Dave Hodges along with James White. We are the co-hosts of the Common Sense Show, coming to you on TalkNetwork.com. And we are pleased to have Paul Preston from Agenda 21 Radio with us. And just a reminder, we are sponsored by foodforliberty.com/Hodges, where we have the grab-and-go bucket, as well as organic powdered milk. Again, that's foodforliberty.com/Hodges. Well, Jim and Paul, we were talking during the break about Jim Fetzer's new book. I haven't had a chance to read it yet, but I may have trouble getting it because I understand his book has been censored. Let's talk about that.
Yeah, and I happen to be in possession of two. One was sent to me, and the other one I bought off Amazon, I think. I'm pretty sure it was Amazon. The title of the book is Nobody Died at Sandy Hook, Jim Fetzer. The editor is Mike Pelichek, I think. And then I happen to be featured in all of Chapter 6 of the book because in Chapter 6, the title of it is Even Obama Officials Confirmed That It Was a Drill. And this is an interview that I conducted with Sophie Smallstrom. And by the way, if you don't know who Sophie is, she really did, I think, one of the most quintessential YouTubes and discovery periods on the whole Sandy Hook incident that really set everybody on fire about it.
You're correct.
She called me, and I think I called her because I wanted her to be on my show, and I was kind of interested in obvious reasons that she'll find out. And sooner, one thing led to another, and she just instantly, as I told her my story and what I saw, she said, "You've got to be on my show." So I was on her show and spent 2 hours on the show, and about 30 minutes of that is captured in the book here. Nobody died at Sandy Hook. So it's a very interesting thing that transpired there. And let me tell you a little bit about I have deeply researched Sandy Hook, and let me tell you about my background. I've been, a former school superintendent, school administrator, 41 years in the system. And one of the things that I did very keenly since about the mid-1980s is help to develop school safety programs and plans for schools and school districts. And I became involved in that because I was involved with several severe earthquakes in school, in class at the time, as an administrator with students. And back in the 80s, we really had no school safety plans. And it's from the evolution, I think, of the earthquakes that and disasters that were, around the nation at the time, tornadoes and so on, that schools started to figure out they needed a plan so to better protect the kids. And so we developed in Southern California school safety plans for earthquakes that ultimately led us into doing such things as, you know, actually staging mock disasters. And so this is in the 1990s that we did, the early, 80s and 90s, to where we conducted, I conducted several, of course, and Dave, you know this, being in schools, you, once a month you have a fire drill. That's just kind of like most schools do that. Some school districts don't, but every school is pretty much by state requirement throughout the 50 states required to have some sort of fire drill or some sort of safe drill. And it's from that that we developed, you know, expanded forms of the drill to where we were actually staging mock disasters. And in our case, we were doing it in a school of 3,000 in Southern California at the time. And, 3,000 kids all being, you know, placed in an environment that was a mock drill so that we could better protect themselves, protect them. They can learn about, you know, circumstances such as what happens when you have five or six bodies in front of you and you're trying to exit a building and you have blood splattered. I mean, we did the whole thing. I did these things that actually were full-on community-wide staged events in which we had to get all the characters and actors together, such as the sheriff, the police, city assets, county assets, state assets, you know, anything that we could bring together to mitigate any kind of disaster, plus at the same time stage something within the school that would give the kids the look and the feel of such a disaster. And most of the time we were concerned with two things, one earthquake and the other one was chemical spills, because at the time we were located at the school that I was involved with, the schools I was involved with, we were located between some major rail hubs. So we were concerned about chemical spills and that sort of thing. So I became quite proficient. Ultimately, later on, in as the years went by, we became more proficient. I was one of the first administrators to start teaching kids about active shooter scenarios because of all the school shootings that were happening with the Clinton administration. Plus, there's the Columbine incident and so on, which I was pretty much involved with back in 1999 as the things happened, as it turned out. That's a whole other story. But we had a relationship at a school that I was at with Columbine, with one of the players there, which was very, very interesting. I think it was Jefferson County detectives called us several times and we interviewed and all that stuff. As part of what was going on there at Columbine, we soon realized that Columbine was much deeper than what has even been reported even today. Of course, they're still trying to keep the lid on so much that's there. But anyway, I became quite proficient at active school shooter training. We trained our schools. I was very, very much maligned by superintendents and so on when I was a principal for putting together these active shooter training drills. We would use the police force. We had resource officers and the sheriff and so on. They'd come in and teach the kids and teach the teachers, you know, how to react in an actual active shooter scenario. And I felt really comfortable with the whole thing. I thought it was the right thing to do since, you know, schools are supposed to be soft targets, when, especially when you put the sign up on the building saying, you know, gun-free zone.
Yeah, exactly. Protection-free zone.
Right. You're broadcasting to terrorists that there's no guns here. It just so happened, a serendipitous thing happened. I got to two different schools. One as a vice principal and one as a principal. And we were redoing the one school. It had been top to bottom refurbished. And the custodian, I was in charge of facilities, and the head custodian came in, "What do you want me to do with these signs?" And, you know, of course, in the process, they had stripped the school of the signs to paint it, plaster, and so on. And they were the gun-free zone signs. So I said, I looked at him and said, "What do you think I want you to do with them?" So he tossed them.
Well, you know, so, Paul, that's pretty interesting. I feel the same way. In fact, I wanted to bring this up to you since you brought it up. And by the way, serendipitously, I did my student teaching at Columbine.
Really?
Yeah, what a small world it is. And
which was that?
Do I have to tell you? It was in the late 70s.
You didn't have to tell me, but I'm glad you did.
Yeah, I did. I was there significantly before, but then I worked in that district for a while, too. I was a head basketball coach in that district prior to moving to Arizona. But I wanted to ask you something, and I've been previously in the past called on the carpet for this, and I work at different levels of education, but on the secondary level, I've been called on the carpet for saying that the current disaster plans we have, the safety plans we have for kids and teachers is a death trap, where they're taught to lock the door, like a locked door is going to stop an AK-47, and herd everybody over in a small space against the wall where they're supposed to remain quiet. That's not defense. That's called laying down to be slaughtered.
Yeah, and that's where active shooter training comes in. And my response to that is I'm totally in agreement with you. If you can escape, escape. But, you know, we sometimes don't know, and this is I still understand, you know, lock the door. Do not get yourself in a group to huddle together. I don't know why, you know, Dave, that to me, that's a disaster waiting to happen. But here's my point, and this is where we get into the active shooter scenario, is be pro. We were very specific about this. Disperse and take arms. Take something with you, because if somebody comes through that door, pound them with whatever you have.
Exactly. Exactly.
Go after them aggressively. Don't sit back and wait to be killed. And we would emphasize with the kids, you know, this is what happened in Columbine. And we would tell them. I was saying this from 2004 on. The terrorists are coming to get you and kill you. What are you going to do? How are you going to react? You have to get that mindset that you're going to defend yourself. And if you're sitting there all huddled in a corner and you're defenseless and you're wimpish, you're going to get killed. And I bring to them the whole scenario, what happened in Columbine. You know, we talk about at what point you take advantage of a shooter. You know, the things about, you know, when he's changing magazines or whatever. I mean, look at how many opportunities in Columbine they had to take those guys out. The kids just never even thought about it. They're so panic stricken.
Well, the best thing you can do is charge them. But,
yeah, absolutely. Know, well, that's another part.
One of the things you do.
Training, just leaving some stuff out here. But.
Exactly. You just crowd the door on the sides with your bigger guys, and you jump one of the shooters and you disarm them and use the gun against them.
Well, look what happened in Roseburg, where the one guy was charging at the shooter.
Yeah.
He took several shots. He still lived. You know, I mean, that's another thing that, you know, he was military trained. He knew what to do. And that's part of what we need to be teaching our kids, because our kids are targets and they're open targets. And this is being promulgated by this administration and every other that we should just let our kids lay down and be slaughtered. And I'm not tolerating that one bit.
When I was called in on the carpet on that, I said exactly, I mean, I was told by the administrator in charge that you will follow the protocols. And I says, no, and you won't either. And
they looked at me. Guaranteed.
And I said, you don't know what the hell you're going to do when the shooting starts. You're either going to be under your desk or you're going to be running like hell.
Here's the definitive point that I always make to everybody. I would say to them, how many of you have been out on a shooting range lately? And everybody kind of look at me with their big eyes. And, you know, of course, the sheriff or the police officer who was with me all the time, they got this whole point. I said, do you know how loud it is when a gun goes off? I said, you're going to crap your pants the first time a gun goes off.
Paul, let's keep that mental image in people's brains here as we come to the edge of this end of this second segment. And we'll carry over on the other side of the break. And we can finish up. You know, let's talk about what happened to the 800 kids, I believe, Paul. That was your section in the book. We can finish up the Sandy Hook, and then we'll pose the question later in the broadcast. Did Hitler actually escape and end up living in Argentina, perhaps, or other places? We'll be back with you here. This is Dave Hodges and James White with the Common Sense Show with our special guest, Paul Preston from Agenda 21 Radio. And stick around. We'll be back after these brief messages.
Talking about America's decline, the liars that rule, the impending police state, the collapse of the dollar and the economy, or the loss of electricity due to an EMP? Well, it's just talk. A wise man does more. He prepares. Whatever the trigger or disaster, you cannot depend on your local grocer, the big box store, or any government handouts to feed your family. So reclaim your independence and food freedom by purchasing Numana Food Storage from foodforliberty.com. Numana Food Storage meals are individually wrapped and placed in a reusable bucket. Numana meals are delicious. Potato cheese casserole, beans and rice, pancakes, pasta primavera, habanero chili, and more. No MSG, no preservatives, no high fructose corn syrup, no GMOs. Nutritious food to feed your family, friends, and assembly at a very reasonable price. Under $2 a meal. So you can have a better shot at surviving the tough times. With a shelf life of 25 years, it's food insurance and food assurance. You'll need to add the fire in the water. Make the wise choice. Order new Mana Food Storage from foodforliberty.com today. Foodforliberty.com.
Do you owe $10,000 or more to the IRS?
Then get on board with the Tax Admiral and let us steer your way to financial freedom.
The IRS is the largest collection agency in the world. They can freeze your bank accounts, seize your car, home, will garnish your paychecks and benefits.
Don't take on the IRS alone. I can fight for you using industry secrets that can help stop the IRS. I'll cut your penalties, slash your interest, and reduce your overall tax bill. Sometimes I can even get it zeroed out completely.
We're an A-rated company with over 30 years experience helping people clean up their mess with the IRS. And we have a 95% customer satisfaction rating.
If you owe $10,000 or more to the IRS, are facing an audit, a lien, or levy, then call me right away.
Call 800-647-1088. Again, that's 800-647-1088. 800-647-1088. 800-647-1088.
Welcome back, and you're listening to the Common Sense Show here on TalkNetwork.com with our sponsor. You know, we are listener supported, and we depend on people to visit our sponsor to keep us on the air, and that would be foodforliberty.com/Hodges, where we are featuring with 6 months same as cash the grab and go bucket as well as powdered organic milk. Good stuff, good supplement to your storage food supply. Again, that's foodforliberty.com/Hodges, our special guest. And we're having a great time talking about morbid topics with our special guest. And that is Paul Preston of Agenda 21 Radio. And Paul, before we jump in and continue down the path we were speaking about with regard to school shootings, let's tell everyone again how they can follow your good work.
Yeah, agenda21radio.com, that's our website. And we have all the links to all the various outlets that we use. Red State Talk Radio is one of the big ones that we have, and we also have TalkStream Live. We're on 24/7 on NewStreamMedia.com. That's our radio link out there, and we are on a number of different affiliates. I think we're up to 40-plus stations that are out there right now following Agenda 21 Radio, and actually we picked up two more as of this afternoon, so I'm pretty happy about that, and I spent a lot of time working on stuff for them. So hopefully they'll be broadcasting it up and ready to go tomorrow. So we're getting around and out and about, and people are finding out about us.
Well, that's great stuff. Well, let's get back to the topic at hand that we were talking about with regard to active school shootings. And let's just start with these bus evacuation drills they do. I have real reservations here, and I have told my son, you are not to get on a bus. You are not to evacuate. I will find you. You will find me. I don't trust where they're going to take you. And, Paul, let me set this out as for just an avenue for you to go down. Back in September of 2011, when they had Operation Mountain Guardian in Denver, Colorado, they had buses pulled to elementary schools. They took kids with parent permission to Sports Authority Field, and they would not release them to their parents. This is why I give the advice I do. Your reaction to that, please.
Well, first of all, they're supposed to release the kids to their parents. When they have these safety drills, or now they've been federalized, so to speak. They used to be local safety drills that were developed. In fact, I was in on the leading edge on that back in the 80s and 90s about locally controlled school district, not federally controlled safety plans and programs. And now they've been federalized as some sort of big way to control everybody. That's really what they are. But I would the school safety plans fundamentally call for a place of evacuation from the school building itself. So like when you have a fire drill, people go out and get in lines out in the field and everything, and everybody thinks it's kind of harmless and so on. The environment has changed, though, as you know, because schools being considered to be soft targets, they're wide open for terrorist attacks, and the terrorists know this. Muslim extremists always use schools and soft targets as their targets. We just need to wake up. This president of the United States, of course, is telling us to play into that. He wants people slaughtered. There's no question in my mind as to how this plays out. But, you know, the secondary thing that happens has been the school bus evacuation. And in some situations, that has been exercised. We've seen this play out actually on TV in a number of places. I would say in this environment, Dave, I think this is probably where you're probably going down the road that I'm down. is that in this current environment, you don't know where they're going to take the kids right now, do you? And if you know,
you don't.
The terrorists probably know too. And therein lies a problem. Now, at some places, the kids have to be taught to discern. And this what I mean by this is they have to have situational awareness. When you talk kids about active shooter situations, they had to have their heads on a swivel. It's a linebacker term. I used to use it as a football coach. But they have to have their heads on a swivel and be aware of what is going on. If there's a time to run and panic and get away, get away. You saw that in Columbine, actually. They ran and got away, and they informally settled on, I think, a couple of churches or one big church outside of Columbine to send everybody to get to. It was sort of a panic situation. I don't think Columbine had too many of their safety plans together, actually. I'm a big critic of the principal at the time. He doesn't like me, and that's okay. That's okay for obvious reasons. But anyway, you know, kids need to learn to protect themselves and be situationally aware at all times. Now, the classic example of what happened in the Sandy Hook situation is that you saw no evidence. And this is where I came in with the book, on Jim Fetzer's book, in Chapter 6. And I talked about the whole scenario of Sandy Hook, and I thought that what they conducted was an extremely poor safety drill, school safety drill. It was terrible. It was evident to me that no school officials were ever involved in this drill that they were doing. And I saw immediately that there's one major flaw. Where are the 700 to 800 students that at the time they claimed they had at the school? Where were those students being evacuated to? You saw no evidence of students being evacuated to a field. You saw no evidence. You still can't find the evidence because it's not there, of any students being loaded on buses and then taken to another location. The classic example of this is what happened in Roseburg. Now, Roseburg is an interesting situation. We could spend hours on the Roseburg thing, and we have stories stacked up on this. We're doing some pretty interesting research about what happened in Roseburg, Oregon. But, you know, fast forward to Roseburg, you know, because of the criticism that mounted on Sandy Hook and everything, they seem to have learned their lesson. Because in Roseburg, the shooting took place, and about 10 to 15 minutes later, the buses were already lining up. Now listen, Dave. You've been in education. You know how these things kind of go. When you have something bad going down on a campus, it's kind of a panicky situation. Not just kind of, it is. And I noticed, the first thing I noticed in Roseburg was that all the buses were so conveniently lined up in the parking lot, including with the parking barricade, the properly placed signage and everything. And you had all the nice little FBI and ATF and DOJ people that were all in their nice little jackets lining people up to get in the buses to take them off to the county fairground. Now, what's wrong with that picture? What's wrong with the picture is the fact that Roseburg happens to be about a two-hour drive to Medford. Well, Medford is where all those federal agencies are located. What in the world are they doing there on the campus at the time when the shooting's taking place?
I can answer that question for you, Paul. It's the same thing as Operation Northwoods. It's the same thing as the 7/7 London bombings, where they were conducting identical drills as to the real event that went on. This was a false flag event.
Absolutely. But people did die. Let's be clear. People died there.
Yes. Yes, absolutely.
And this is, they've from Sandy Hook, they realized they needed people to die in the scenarios. And now they're killing people. And they killed people in Roseburg. And I can tell you that because one of my reporters, who is not going to be named for safety reasons, is a very, very good friend of a person who was killed in that English class. Now, that English class was also supposed to be the class in which was Alexei Sokolov, or whatever his name was, one of the three guys who stopped the terrorist attack on the train in Paris. He lives in Roseburg. He wasn't there. Why? Because he was with Dancing with the Stars. He signed up for the class. He was going to be there, but he chose to stay in Hollywood that day to practice.
Hey, Paul, talk a little bit, if you can, about crisis actors. Now, I remember you probably remember the classic This guy that was apparently
Gene Rosen.
Apparently he was a parent of one of the children that died, and he comes out of a building and he's smiling and he's laughing, sort of, you know, yucking it up, and then he all of a sudden takes a deep breath and he sort of gets into grieving parent mode. I mean, there was a great use of a tremendous use of crisis actors in the whole Sandy Hook, was there not?
Yes, and people need to be aware there are these people that are out there for hire for crisis acting. And this has been part of the federalization of this program. There's great money and incentive out there for people. If you want to conduct a safety drill, you're going to need these crisis actors. I alluded to this back in my experiences in Southern California, where we would actually use kids as actors. You know, in other words, we would designate certain kids to be dead, certain kids to be injured, and they'd sometimes lay in the hallway so that in a panic situation, people would have to learn how to step around them. Plus, if they are injured, we always taught the kids, if somebody's injured in front of you, you need to move on because you need to take care of yourself first. This person might die, might not, but whatever, don't worry about them because, as you know, when you're rushing out of facilities and so on, if somebody stops and takes care of someone at the point in which there's an active emergency going on, they become a bigger problem. It kind of knots everybody up in terms of, you know, people in the hallway and things like that. So the crisis actor, it was interesting because it wasn't until my later days in 2009 and 10, maybe a little bit later than that, maybe 11, that I started getting requests from these groups that are crisis actors. I can't recall specifically, but I thought it was Colorado Springs, in which there was a company in Colorado Springs or Golden, Colorado, someplace in Colorado. I knew it was Colorado, that would provide crisis actors. It would just come out of your budget for those scenarios. And, of course, now you can see what it did. It morphed into same different things. Gene Rosen. The guy, now, this is a classic example. If you're doing a safety drill, and Dave, this gets your point about bus drivers, and you're doing a mass evacuation, and in Sandy Hook they said they had between 700 and 800 kids. There's not one shred of evidence that indicates that ever took place. Not one still photograph, not one helicopter photograph, not one video, not anything on the ground other than you see this little conga line of kids. And by the way, it's so obvious that conga line of kids that was being showed, five or six kids, that's not mass evacuation. In fact, if you take a look and do comparative analysis of the parking lot, you take a look at what's going on in the cars and so on that day, it's completely shot on a different day. It's obvious. I mean, this is the kind of stuff, their information just falls apart. But this whole thing about Gene Rosen, remember he said that the bus driver dropped off five or six kids. He brought the kids in. He gave them cookies and crackers and teddy bears. Gene Rosen, to me, sounds like a freaking pedophile. And I would no more. But the other part of it is no bus driver in their right mind would ever do that. Ever.
I thought the same thing, Paul, about that guy.
He's a pedophile.
We're coming here to the end of this segment here on the Common Sense Show, and we've been joined by this last three segments by our good friend Paul Presson from Agenda 21 Radio. Please stick around with us after the break. Jim and Dave will be back after these brief messages.
Talking about America's decline, the liars that rule, the impending police state, the collapse of the dollar and the economy, or the loss of electricity due to an EMP? Well, it's just talk. A wise man does more. He prepares. Whatever the trigger or disaster, you cannot depend on your local grocer, the big box store, or any government handouts to feed your family. So reclaim your independence and food freedom by purchasing Numana Food Storage from foodforliberty.com. Numana Food Storage meals are individually wrapped and placed in a reusable bucket. Numana meals are delicious. Potato cheese casserole, beans and rice, pancakes, pasta primavera, habanero chili, and more. No MSG, no preservatives, no high fructose corn syrup, no GMOs. Nutritious food to feed your family, friends, and assembly at a very reasonable price. under $2 a meal, so you can have a better shot at surviving the tough times. With a shelf life of 25 years, it's food insurance and food assurance. You'll need to add the fire in the water. Make the wise choice. Order new Mana Food Storage from foodforliberty.com today. Foodforliberty.com.
Do you owe $10,000 or more to the IRS?
Then get on board with the Tax Admiral and let us steer your way to financial freedom.
The IRS is the largest collection agency in the world. They can freeze your bank accounts, seize your car, home, will garnish your paychecks and benefits.
Don't take on the IRS alone. I can fight for you using industry secrets that can help stop the IRS. I'll cut your penalties, slash your interest, and reduce your overall tax bill. Sometimes I can even get it zeroed out completely.
We're an A-rated company with over 30 years experience helping people clean up their mess with the IRS. And we have a 95% customer satisfaction rating.
If you owe $10,000 or more to the IRS, are facing an audit, a lien, or levy, then call me right away.
Call 800-647-1088. Again, that's 800-647-1088. 800-647-1088. 800-647-1088.
Welcome back, and thanks for staying with us through the break once again. This is Dave Hodges along with James White. We are the co-hosts of The Common Sense Show, and we're joined by our special guest, Paul Preston from Agenda 21 Radio. And we're going to change gears now. We're going to change away from school safety, and we're going to move in the direction of whatever happened to Adolf Hitler. No, you heard me correctly. I know you probably just did a double take here. Say, yep. Dave Hodges guy, he's lost his mind. But no, we actually are going to put Hitler on the table. And Paul's got some good information on what happened to Hitler. So, Paul, let's go there. Whatever happened to good old Adolf?
Well, you know, I was like everybody else. And I got to tell you, I have to say special thanks and hats off to Peter Lavenda, author of The Rat Line. And let me give you a little bit of a clue as to what I was involved with. Back in 1988, one of my administrative responsibilities was to be the overseer of a young lady by the name of Janet Evans, Olympic gold medalist at El Dorado High School in Placentia, California. And Janet Evans went off to the 1988 Olympics and got two world records in swimming and three gold medals in swimming, and defeated the East Germans in just an absolutely heroic fashion. And ultimately, what happened when she showed up at the school back in September of 1988, following her performance in the Olympics, we put CNN as a camera crew in her first period classroom, and she marched in. And to the shock of the world, especially in the East German, totalitarian regime of Erich Honecker, they got to see firsthand that she was really truly a high school student and was going to a high school in Orange County, California, and that was a huge shock. Well, fast forward to 1989, there's no question in my mind that the images that were being portrayed from her coming back to school there played huge in the collapse of communism. Now, not really in saying that that's what brought it about, but it was one of the many things that helped bring it about. And there's a whole story that I cover and I talk about in another sense. But I want to get into the Hitler thing so that people understand, you know, about Adolf Hitler and about the influences of Adolf Hitler even today. But I decided at the time when this all happened that I was going to travel to East Europe and I was going to discover for myself some of the things and do research as to the collapse of communism. So I had the opportunity in 1992 to travel to Barcelona, Spain, where Janet was in her second Olympics and performed and ultimately won the gold medal and a silver medal. But, you know, the big thing for me was the discovery of the collapse of communism. And it was interesting because on the opening day of the Olympics, I was actually not too far from the stadium, and I was in the library area there, which is a huge, huge area out in front of the stadium, and had a huge grassy field out in front. Well, right there next to the roadway and where the grassy field was, a large Coke stand, red and white, and about 20 or 30, probably about 40 different table rounds, all white with the plastic white table and chairs and stuff, and they were all empty. Now, mind you, you had thousands of people walking up and down the street, and nobody at this Coke stand. I don't know if they're protesting American Coke or whatever. So I decided to get myself a Coke, and I got myself a Coke, went over and sat down. And lo and behold, a perfect stranger walks up to me and says, "Excuse me, but are you an American?" I said, "Yeah." And so we started up a conversation, just he and I sitting at the table. And so about 30 minutes into the conversation, I said, "You know, well, let's introduce ourselves. Why don't we just do that?" And he said, I said, "Well, who are you?" And I said, "Well, I'm Paul Preston. I'm a school administrator. You know, I'm here because one of my premier athletes, Janet Evans," and he knew all about her and everything. And he said, I said, "Well, who are you?" And he says, "My name is Roger Thoreau, and I'm the chief European correspondent for the Wall Street Journal." And I said, "Oh." And I said, "The other part of what I'm doing here is I'm researching the collapse of communism." And he looked at me square in the eye and he says, "I'm your man." Because he knew every East European totalitarian that I needed to talk about. Now, with the millions of people in Barcelona at the time, what's the probability of that happening, Dave?
Next to none, of course.
And so what he did in the conversation, he said to me, this is a three-hour conversation, mind you. He said to me, "What you need to do is go visit the Church of St. Nikolai, and you'll get your answers there." And so he gave me his business card. I got his business card. He says, "Use this to go in." So I traveled. I literally stopped what I was. I went through the Olympics, and a week later, I got back on the train and went to Leipzig, East Germany, and visited at the Church of St. Nikolai with a guy by the name of Friedrich Mercurius, who gave me a great deal of insight into what was going on with the collapse of communism, which he told me all about, and that's another story. But fast forward, I decided I needed to find out for myself some answers about Hitler and what was going on there. And so I traveled back into, I'd already previously, in a couple weeks before that, been in Berlin, spent a lot of time in Berlin researching. But I went to find out where the Führerbunker was. And I needed to find that out because it was in the no man's land, and there's a whole bunch of stuff about the Brandenburg Gate. So I went to the Führerbunker, and very difficult to get through. I managed to squeeze the Germans, the West Germans, had taken parts of the Berlin Wall and kind of circled off that whole area, so you couldn't get through. But I managed to squeeze through two sections of the Berlin Wall and went out to a mounded area, in which there was a guy standing, and he had black pants on, white T-shirt, and a white hat. And he was there, and he had a whole bunch of literature I couldn't read. All the copies on top were in German, but the bottom copies were in English, and it was all about preserving the Führerbunker. And I didn't know, but he told me, he says, "You're standing on the entrance to the Führerbunker." And I said, "Oh." So we talked and talked and talked. I spent about an hour with the guy. And I said, "Well, where did they find the body of Adolf Hitler and Eva Braun?" He said, "Well, over there by this big high-rise building in which Katarina Witt, the Olympics figure skater, lived in. And there's a little area, play area. That's the area that they found his body." So I started to walk away. And he said to me, "But they didn't find him because he escaped. He got away." And, of course, at the time in 92, I thought, here's another nutcase, right? So fast forward to 2011, and it's late at night, and I'm listening to George Norrie, and a guy on the radio by the name of Peter Lavenda is on, and all of a sudden he starts talking about stuff I know, the stuff I experienced with this guy who was standing on the mound that day. And I said to myself, you know what, there's something wrong with this picture. So I sat up and I listened to him, and as it turned out, Peter Lavenda wrote the book called The Rat Line. And the Rat Line documents how Adolf Hitler got out of Germany, and he escaped it not only to Argentina, but ultimately to Surabaya in Indonesia. And the reason why he did that is because Adolf Hitler, as you're finding out if you're watching the series in the History Channel, if you're following that series, Adolf Hitler was being a hunted man even by his own people. They wanted to capture him so they could catch the bounty on him. And the Nazis, and so did the Catholic Church, realized that they needed to get rid of Adolf Hitler into Indonesia, which they did do. And he successfully lived there, according to Peter Lavenda. And that's a whole other story we could get into about how Peter found this information out. that he successfully lived there until he's about until about 1970, 71. I can't remember, but there's a picture in the Ratline book or the website. You can see Peter Levenda actually sitting there at the gravestone. He was a doctor, P-O-C-H, Poch, is, it was his, considered his, to be his other name. Now, there's a lot of information that says that he was in Argentina and he died there. The one thing that's very conclusive at this point, and Peter Levenda tells this story, it's an epic story about how he found out. Now, Peter Levenda, by the way, he doesn't come without credentials. Peter Levenda wrote 12 books about chasing Nazis because he made it a life of chasing Nazis since the 70s. He's been chasing Nazis since the 70s in Argentina and all around the world. And he's written these 12 books. And in every one of those 12 books, he said Adolf Hitler died in the bunker. And, of course, it was a big, rude awakening for him to find out that he didn't do that. In fact, what happened was that he knew, as well as all the Nazi hunters knew, that it was the Catholic Church and the Pope that were ferreting out all these Nazis from Nazi Germany after World War II, actually before the end of World War II and following World War II, through a system called the Ratline, which involved a lot of monasteries and churches and so on, in which these individuals were kept. Now, thousands of people fled, and thousands of Nazis escaped to South America, Central America, the Middle East in particular, because you had the Muslim Brotherhood that they were bonding with, and, of course, to Indonesia. But the stunner to Peter was that he was in Indonesia at the time. This is in 2010, 2011. And he was writing a book on something completely unrelated, and he was invited to a dinner. And he was invited to a dinner, I think, for a purpose. In fact, he's going to be on my show tomorrow, and I'm going to ask him. But he was invited to a dinner, a Polynesian or Indonesian type of dinner. And they invited him to say, hey, you know, we just wanted to invite you because we know that you've been a Nazi hunter. And could you kind of explain to us about a certain bishop who showed up here with certain individuals? And so he was stunned to find out that there was a bishop that had shown up there in Indonesia. He didn't even think about Nazis coming to Indonesia at the time. And he was stunned to find out that this one particular bishop was the highest of ranking of bishops directly talking to the Pope about certain high-ranking Nazis. And these people claimed that this bishop had come to them in Indonesia with Adolf Hitler. And he settled there until he died in 1970. So, of course, the ramifications, if Hitler, well, here's the thing. It just so happened that when he got this story, and he, of course, just stunned by it, that J. Edgar Hoover's files, after 50 years, had become opened, and he had access to his files, and he found out that Adolf Hitler and the federal government were absolutely tracking and knew every which way Adolf Hitler was going after World War II.
Well, Paul, we're going to have to, unfortunately, cut this off way too short. We could go on for, I'm sure, another two or three segments talking about this. This is very interesting, and perhaps we'll have you on again soon and just talk about the Hitler subject. But before we go, we want to give you the opportunity to once again give out your website and information. We got about 30 seconds left here before the end of the show.
Yeah, it's agenda21radio.com, and you can email me at paul@agenda21radio.com.
Well, we want to thank you so much, Paul, for joining us here on the Common Sense Show. We want to thank you, all you listeners out there, for staying until the end. This is James White, along with my co-host, Dave Hodges from TalkNetwork.com, and we will see you next time on the Common Sense Show.